All right, diving right in. Today we're taking a look at some really cool stuff you sent our way.
Yeah, we're going deep on this one, like to the core.
Straight to the heart of a concept that's both fundamental and, I think, kind of mind-blowing. The incarnation.
Absolutely.
Huge concept.
And our mission today is to really break down those key insights for you, to bring some clarity to this profound idea.
Yeah, maybe even spark some new ways of thinking about it, you know?
I like that. Sparking new thoughts. So for this deep dive, we're zeroing in on a lecture from Dr. Robert A. Peterson.
Specifically, session 10 of his Christology series. Catchy title, right? Systematics, Incarnation, John 1.1, as 8.
Systematics. Now, for those of us who might need a little refresher, what's that about again?
Systematics. Think of it as the work of bringing order to our theological beliefs.
Right, putting it all together like a puzzle.
Exactly. Making sure everything fits together in a coherent way. So in this session, Dr. Peterson is really digging deep into the opening verses of John's gospel. That's John 1.1:18, unpacking the richness there. Okay. John 1.1-18. Got it. So Dr. Peterson sets the stage, right? He's looking at this passage as the prologue, the intro to the whole gospel.
Yeah, he kind of sees it like a really well-structured play. You've got the prologue, then the main action unfolds, and then the grand finale.
Love that analogy. And he's making a point that this prologue isn't just beautiful poetry, it's overflowing with crucial theological ideas.
Big time. It lays the groundwork for everything else that follows in John's account of Jesus.
Almost like John is saying, hey, you got to grasp this first, right at the start.
Right. And what's at the very heart of this foundational prologue, according to Dr. Peterson, the incarnation? He lays out a pretty powerful definition, too. It's the eternal, all-powerful God becoming a genuine human being in Jesus of Nazareth.
That's huge. Not just like, you know, stopping by for a visit, right?
Exactly. He makes a point of saying this wasn't God just like hanging out in a human body for a while. It was the eternal Son truly taking on a complete human nature, fully God and fully human.
Okay, mind officially blown. So back to that literary structure you mentioned, the way John sets this prologue up. Dr. Peterson is very clear that the incarnation isn't some afterthought or later development. It's front and center, right there at the start.
That's what I love about this stuff, the attention to detail. And Dr. Peterson points out that John uses a very specific literary technique to really drive this home. It's called a
It's
chiasm.
chiasm. It's like poetry, right? Some kind of pattern.
It is. Think of it like a sandwich. You got similar things on the outside, and the main point, the good stuff, is in the middle.
Okay, I'm following. Give me the sandwich.
All right. So first you have the word in verse 1. Then a bit later around verse 7, we see the appearance of light. Following that, in verse 9, it's the light coming into the world.
Yeah.
And then bam, right in the middle. The filling we have, the word became flesh in verse 14.
Whoa, that's intentional. He's doing that on purpose.
Exactly. It's
Yeah.
not just random. Dr. Peterson sees this as an ABB pattern, a mirror image, basically.
Not just ABA.
Nope, more intricate than that. It's a deliberate structure to emphasize that central point.
Okay, so John's not just playing word games here. He's making a point, right?
Definitely. By placing the word became flesh at the very center of this chiasm, he's highlighting the incarnation. It's the core idea, the pivot point of this whole introduction.
It's like the hinge that everything else swings on. Cool. So this prologue, it does more than just present the incarnation. Dr. Peterson points out it also sets up some major themes that John will explore later in the gospel. Like, boom, 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 here's what you need to know about Jesus.
Right. And one of the first things we encounter is this idea of Jesus as the Word. It's like right out of the gate, we're introduced to him as the ultimate way God communicates with us.
The word. I'm already thinking back to Genesis. In the beginning, God said, God speaks creation into existence. Is that connected?
Absolutely. Dr. Peterson makes a strong connection there. But in John, it goes even deeper. John takes this idea of God's spoken word and personifies it. The word isn't just some abstract concept, some fleeting sound. It's a person.
A person. Like a who, not a what.
Exactly. The word, or logos in the Greek, is presented as the second person of the Trinity, existing alongside God from the very beginning. Remember the incredible opening? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So it's not just that Jesus was God's spokesperson. He was and is God himself.
Right. Mind-blowing. Right. And then we get this other powerful image, light. Dr. Peterson explains that light is often used as a symbol of revelation, of understanding.
Like light chases away the darkness, makes things clear.
Exactly. And the true light, as John puts it, is Jesus, the Son of God, bringing divine understanding to a world that's often lost in spiritual darkness.
Okay, I love these images, word and light, both so powerful. So we've got these two names for Jesus right at the start, the word and the light, not even Jesus or Christ.
Interesting, right? And Dr. Peterson really digs into why these particular titles are so important for understanding who Jesus is.
Yeah, let's unpack those a bit more. The word. Why does John start there? It's not the typical name, you know.
Right. And Dr. Peterson makes a compelling argument here. He's saying that John isn't primarily borrowing from Greek philosophy, which was a common idea for a while. He's drawing on something much deeper, much older, the Old Testament.
Ah, back to Genesis again.
Right. Think about it. In Genesis, God speaks and things happen. Creation comes into being through his word. It's an act of pure power.
And John's picking up on that, you're saying.
Exactly. But he takes it a step further. Instead of just an abstract force, the word in John is a person. It's the second person of the Trinity existing before the universe itself.
So the word is more than just an idea or a concept. It's Jesus himself.
Exactly. And this word has been with God from the beginning. Now, let's think about light. Dr. Peterson explains that light is like a universal symbol.
Yeah, it's about clarity. Seeing things clearly.
Exactly. It's how we understand how we perceive truth. And the true light, as John calls Jesus, is the ultimate source of that understanding. It's the Son of God, bringing divine illumination to a world that often stumbles around in darkness.
Okay, that's beautiful. And then, of course, we get to the actual miracle of the incarnation. Dr. Peterson really emphasizes that John 1.14 is the clear, undeniable teaching of this incredible event, those words. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us.
Wow. Yeah. Doesn't get much more straightforward than that. Became flesh, not appeared in flesh, not borrowed flesh, became flesh.
It's powerful, right? And Dr. Peterson points out that so much of what Jesus says later in John, like I came from above, only makes sense if we understand this foundation, if we get what John is laying down here in the prologue.
You got it. Okay, so let's circle back for a sec. Why word? Why light? Not, you know, savior or messiah, something more. Expected.
Good question. What's Dr. Peterson's take?
He argues that these specific titles are crucial for understanding the role Jesus came to fulfill. Word, for example, points to communication, revelation.
So like God revealing himself to humanity.
Yes. Think of the Son as God's ultimate message, his definitive communication to us, like God's final word, literally.
And light, we talked about that too. It's about bringing understanding, revealing truth.
Exactly. And these are just like nice metaphors. They reveal something essential about Jesus' identity and purpose, who he is and why he came.
So Dr. Peterson is pretty adamant that all of this is rooted in the Old Testament, not like some borrowing from Greek philosophy.
Yeah, he makes that super clear. He says that the backdrop for John 1 is Genesis 1 and 2, not Plato or Aristotle.
Interesting. That phrase, in the beginning, in John, it's almost identical to Genesis. Right?
Exactly. It's a direct echo. And in Genesis, you've got God speaking light into existence. A powerful image, right?
It's super powerful. And then in John, that act of speaking, the word itself is a person. It's the pre-incarnate Christ.
Whoa. Yeah. That's huge. And the way light and darkness are used in John, it's also really interesting. In Genesis 1, they're more literal. You know, physical light and darkness.
Right. Day and night.
Exactly. But in John, they take on a deeper meaning. Dr. Peterson calls it metaphorical.
Okay, break that down for me. What does he mean?
So in John, light represents Christ's revealing of God, unveiling truth, while darkness symbolizes the world's rejection of God, its ignorance.
Almost like a battle between good and evil.
You could think of it that way. It's a powerful contrast between divine truth and human resistance.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about Jesus's deity, his divine nature. What about his humanity? Does this prologue touch on that as well?
Oh, absolutely. And Dr. Peterson, make sure we don't miss it. He points to that powerful phrase in verse 14, the word became flesh. Sarx in the Greek. It's like the most basic down-to-earth word for flesh. No getting around it.
He became one of us, literally.
Right. And Dr. Peterson points out how this contrasts with some Greek philosophies that saw the physical body as something impure, even an obstacle to the spiritual.
Yeah, that whole mind-body dualism thing.
Exactly. But John is emphasizing the reality of Jesus' human nature. There's no separation there.
No splitting Jesus into two parts. He's fully God and fully human, all at the same time.
Precisely. And Dr. Peterson also brings up John the Baptist's testimony in verses 14 and 15. John clearly acknowledges that Jesus arrived on the scene after him, in human terms.
Which is really interesting because in terms of their divine natures, Jesus existed long before John. So even John recognizes that, acknowledging Jesus' ultimate superiority.
For sure. Okay, now let's get back to those arguments for Jesus' deity. The evidence that Dr. Peterson pulls out of this prologue, there's a lot to unpack.
Hit me with it.
All right, first up, we have that foundational statement in verse 1, the Word was God. Dr. Peterson goes into detail about the Greek here. He's specifically addressing those groups who translate it as a god.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that interpretation before.
Right. But Dr. Peterson, he strongly disagrees with that. He says that in this specific grammatical context, in this sentence, the Greek word theos, without the definite article the, still means God, without a doubt. In fact, he argues that its placement in the sentence actually emphasizes the point.
Like saying, that is truly dog to emphasize its dogness.
Exactly. And he points to other instances in the same chapter where theos is used without the article and still clearly means God. Like in verse 6, where John the Baptist is described as a man sent from God.
So consistency is key, right? We can't just pick and choose how we want to translate things.
Exactly. And Dr. Peterson is arguing that a consistent and accurate understanding of the Greek grammar points to Jesus' divine nature right from the start of John's gospel.
Okay, what else? What other clues does Dr. Peterson point to?
Well, that amazing phrase, in the beginning was the Word. It links directly back to Genesis 1.1. It establishes the Word's pre-existence. The Word was around before the universe was created.
Yeah, that's pretty clear. Right. So much for the Jesus was just a good man argument.
Right. And then we have the Word was with God. This points to a distinct personhood within the Godhead, like a hint of the Trinity, which develops more fully later in Christian theology.
Okay, I'm seeing it. It's like the seeds of the Trinity are being planted right here.
Totally. Then we come to verse 3, and this one is key. All things were made through him. Without him was not anything made that was made.
Okay, that's a pretty comprehensive statement.
It is. And Dr. Peterson stresses how crucial this is. The Son isn't just another part of creation. He's the agent through whom creation happened.
He's on the God side of the equation, not on the created side.
Exactly. And then boom, verse 4. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. Dr. Peterson explains that eternal life itself resides in the Logos.
Wow. So Jesus isn't just some great teacher or prophet. He is the source of life itself.
That's how John presents it. And this very life, it's the light that shines into the darkness of humanity, allowing us to understand God.
Amazing. Okay, we've got creation, we've got life, we've got light. What else you got?
Well, get this. The fact that Jesus was rejected by the world, Dr. Peterson sees that as another pointer to his divine nature.
Wait, really? Rejection equals divinity.
Hear me out. Verse 10. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. There's this profound irony in the Creator becoming part of his creation and being met with, well, basically a shrug.
Ouch. Like, hey, I made all this, and you don't even recognize me.
Exactly. It's kind of heartbreaking, but also points to this incredible humility on God's part. And then there's the whole thing about becoming children of God. That's verse 12.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Dr. Peterson emphasizes that this ability to grant that right to make us children of God, it's something only God can do.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Only God can make you a child of God.
Right. It's a divine prerogative. And then, oh man, verse 14 just explodes with evidence. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth.
Glory, grace, and truth. That's like a divine trifecta right there.
Right. Dr. Peterson is pointing out that these attributes, they belong to God. And they were visibly present in Jesus. It's like the divine shining through his humanity.
I love that. The divine shining through. It's like a sneak peek behind the curtain.
Totally. Then we get John the Baptist's statement in verse 15. He who comes after me ranks before me because he was before me. Might sound a bit confusing, but it's pointing to Jesus's pre-existence. He's ultimately superior to John, even though John came first in earthly terms.
Like John is saying, don't let the birth order fool ya.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Then there's the sheer abundance of grace in verse 16. For from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace.
Overflowing with grace, like a fountain.
That's a great image.
Yeah.
And Dr. Peterson emphasizes the divine source of this grace. It flows from Jesus.
He's not just a channel for grace. He's the source.
Right. Then in verse 17, we get a comparison. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ.
Okay, so how does Dr. Peterson interpret that? It's not saying the law is bad.
Right.
Right.
No, not at all. He clarifies that this isn't about diminishing the law. It's about highlighting Jesus as the ultimate source of both grace and truth.
Like, the law was a step, but Jesus is the destination.
You got it. And then finally, verse 18, the grand finale of the prologue. No one has ever seen God. The only God who is at the Father's side, he has made him known.
Powerful. The ultimate reveal.
Right. And Dr. Peterson highlights the unique role of the Son in making the Father known. That language, at the Father's side, points to an incredibly close relationship, an intimacy that's hard to fathom.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here, but there's one verse I want to circle back to, verse 9. It's the one about the light shining on everyone.
Oh yeah, that one. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world.
Right. Dr. Peterson spent some time addressing potential misunderstandings about that verse.
He does. He talks about how the translations can be a bit tricky and clarifies his own view on its meaning.
Okay, because some translations make it sound like everyone automatically benefits from this light, like a universal gift of grace that enables anyone to believe.
Yeah, I've heard that interpretation. But Dr. Peterson favors translations like the ESV, the one that emphasizes the incarnation, that the light was coming into the world.
So it's about the historical event, not some universal principle.
Exactly. And he argues that gives light to everyone should be understood within that historical context. Those who encountered Jesus, witnessed his signs, heard his words, they were the ones who received this light.
Okay, so it's not like everyone automatically gets a free pass just because Jesus came into the world. There's still a choice involved.
Exactly. You got to choose to step into the light, so to speak.
So all of this is fascinating, of course, but let's get practical for a minute. What does all this mean for us, like, today, in 2025?
Right. Great question. Well, Dr. Peterson doesn't leave us hanging. He outlines a few key takeaways. First, the simple act of receiving Christ, of believing in his name, grants us the privilege of becoming children of God.
We're adopted into God's family.
That's how he puts it. And he emphasizes that this is something we could never earn or achieve on our own. It's a pure gift, an act of divine grace.
A free gift. Amazing. What else?
Second, the apostles, those closest to Jesus, they witnessed his glory firsthand, a real manifestation of God's brilliance, even in the everyday moments of his life.
Like, they saw the Godness shining through.
Yeah. And Dr. Peterson paints a really powerful picture to illustrate this. Think about the stench of Lazarus's body in the tomb. Death, decay, it's pretty awful.
Yeah.
And then contrast that with the undeniable glory of God revealed in Lazarus's resurrection.
Whoa, yeah. From death to life. From the ordinary to the extraordinary.
Exactly. And this points to a deeper truth.
Mm-hmm.
That God's glory can be present even in the most unexpected places. And of course, there's that central miracle, the incarnation itself.
Yeah, this whole idea of God becoming human still boggles my mind, honestly.
It is mind-blowing, isn't it? And Dr. Peterson encourages us to really sit with that, to grasp the immensity of it, that the eternal, all-powerful God willingly became a vulnerable baby.
A baby, just like any other baby, except not, you know.
Exactly. And he even points to the worship of the shepherds and the wise men. It's like, this is the appropriate response. This is how we should react to this unprecedented event.
It's not just a nice story. It's a reality that demands awe and wonder.
Totally. And ultimately, Dr. Peterson reminds us of the why, the purpose behind this incredible act. It was for us sinners and our salvation.
It's all about us. That's humbling.
It is. It's for our redemption, for restoring our relationship with God, that he entered human history as Jesus Christ. He didn't have to, but he chose to.
Wow. Okay, so we've journeyed through John 1.1 through 18, guided by Dr. Peterson's insights. And what have we learned? That the incarnation, this idea of the eternal word becoming flesh, isn't just some random idea John threw in there. It's the foundation for everything else.
Yeah, it's the lens through which we're meant to understand everything else in the gospel.
Yeah.
It's not just hinted at. It's proclaimed right from the very start.
John is laying it all out, making sure we don't miss it. We see Jesus's full humanity, his pre-existent deity, his role as creator, revealer, life giver. It's like the ultimate biography, but also the ultimate love story.
So well said. It's truly mind-blowing, isn't it? God's radical love for us displayed in this amazing act of stepping into our world. And I think that leads to a really powerful question for all of us.
Lay it on me. What questions should we be wrestling with?
Think about it. The creator of the universe, becoming part of his own creation? How does that reshape your understanding of God, of his love for us?
Yeah. It's not just about distant decrees and pronouncements. It's personal.
Exactly. And what new questions does this spark for you? What thoughts do you want to explore further? John 1.118 is just the beginning. The invitation to dive deeper is always open.